This is part two of Brian Keating, who you've probably listened to before on this podcast. Both part one and part two are available today. You can download both of them. As always, a great conversation with Brian where I learned so much and heard so many interesting stories. So here it is.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
Brian, you and I consider us friends, but we've only met on podcasts.
That's not true.
In the TEDx in San Diego.
Yeah, we met in person in the green room.
Yes. Yeah.
That was like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
But like I should spend more time face to face with my friends. You know, you invited me to, I think it was your 50th party. I was not able to make it. Yep. I should have made an effort, more of an effort to make it. I had intended initially to go, and then things caught up with me and I couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And
I know.
I feel I should be less ambitious and more about, improving my relationships, improving my mentorships, improving at the things I love doing instead of always chasing after false accolades and things I don't necessarily enjoy doing. This is advice.
Have you ever heard this book before called The Five Regrets of the Dying?
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. One of those is, as you said, I wish I kept up with my friends. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. I wonder how many people are actually doing that though. And these are people on hospice, basically, or right before hospice, at the end of their life, there's some caregiver the nurse that's asking these questions. I think she's in Australia. It's a great book. I haven't read it, but the summary is just it's one of these books, it's like the book of the Ten Commandments. You just need to read them, I think. I wish I had let myself be happier. I wish I had the courage to express my opinions and my feelings, and I wish I hadn't worked so hard. So I see that. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Nobody is on their dying, bed and said, I wish I spent more time on Zoom telecons. Definitely agree with that. But I wish I had the courage to live a life. How many people do you think right now, James, are not living the life that they want, and they're leading it because, an 80-year-old or 70-year-old?
Most people.
Really?
Yeah, I can think.
Who do you care about? I mean, let's take Jay. You think Jay is living a life,
Jay is living the best life he could possibly be living right now. Jay has no complaints.
Jay and I have spent more time together in the last 2 years than you and I have. We had amazing Chinese food.
Looking for James is my best time ever.
Yeah, it's true.
I know. It's pretty. How long have you guys been together? Does he still get you anniversary presents?
2016.
It's 2016.
2016.
Yeah.
Have you given him a raise? Wait, is he going on strike? Jay, are you going on strike?
No, never on strike with James. Never on strike with James. James is probably the only employer that I would never go on strike with.
Is this longer than most of your marriages, James?
it's longer than all of them. my business partner, Dan, he's my partner in investing, and he's been my partner on several entrepreneurial ventures. He's been on this podcast actually about 6 or 7 times now because we did.
Yeah.
And we've been partners. Well, he started working for me in late 1999 or early 2000. So he was working for me. But we've been actual 50 partners since 2001. So that's 21 and a half years right now. And we have never once had an argument. Now, we've disagreed. We've disagreed on lots of things, but we've never been, I've never been upset, angry at him. And I'm pretty sure vice versa, which is a really great, I'm really happy about that partnership. I wish I had more of that in my life. Jay and I.
But I think living a life that's not true to yourself. Like my father, again, I ended up reuniting with him, but he always blamed his mother, as a 50-year-old, when I knew him as an adult, we were both adults. And he blamed, my mother didn't even know how to breastfeed and this. And I'm you're 50 years old, man. I'm overweight. I could lose another 15, 20 pounds easily.
You don't seem overweight.
I carry it well. I did drop 10, 5'11".
Yeah, how much do you weigh?
5'11", 5'12", with the afro. how much do I weigh? Yeah. That's very personal. I weigh north of 200 pounds.
All right, so
I could lose 25 pounds and be really, then I'd be as ripped as you are looking right now.
Okay, I'm at the upper end of my weight in my life. Like, so I'm 5'9" and I'm 160 pounds. So really, I feel like I should be, normally I've been about around 150, and for some reason now I'm 160, and I don't know why.
Well, some reason. I don't know what happened the last couple of years.
Well,
I thought that you were like jogging 6 kilometers a day, you know, back
then. I wear the same size clothes. I have a theory that I've been working out more, so, and muscle weighs more than fat. So
that's true. It does. It does. But, you know, my father would say things like, and I have one of my sons is like, I call him my twin. And he looks like me. He acts like me. He's got the same personality. He wants to have a podcast. He wants to meet Jay. But he's overweight. As I was really overweight as a kid. He's not as bad as I am. And he's much taller. He's like super tall. He's almost 5 feet tall and he's just 10 years old. But when I look at him and I'm like, okay, so I was overweight as a kid. Now, if I go to a therapist and we have this like Matt Damon, you know, in Good Will Hunting. Remember that movie? And like,
yeah.
Like, if I've learned anything from movies, James, is that to have a psychological breakthrough, a man has to like become completely weepy, teary, and just bawling on his therapist, you know, Robin Williams chair, right? Okay. So, like, let's say that's true for me because my parents got divorced. My father abandoned me, my older brother and me, and went off, created a new life, got remarried, didn't talk to me, you know, did his thing. Then, you know, and I live with my stepfather who had, you know, he would drink a lot. He would hit, you know, on occasion, you know, just discipline. I wasn't abused, you know, thank God. And I have a lot of respect for what he did. But this is just the reality of my life, right? It happened. You know, I was uprooted. I moved 5 times before going freshman year of high school. It was a lot for me. And so you could say, oh, well, like, that's why you're overweight, you know, as a kid. And that's why maybe you're still overweight because you know, you haven't dealt with this childhood trauma. Maybe I do need that, James. Maybe I need to go to Robin Williams and just break down, bawl my eyes out. But I haven't, you know, whatever. I'm not saying anything negative about psychotherapy. I think it's fine. But then I look at my son, you know, and he's also a little overweight. Again, not nearly as much as I was. He's had like 2 loving parents, never divorced, never moved, never lived in a different room. You know, goes to great school, has a lot of, you know, and he's like, oh, so in other words, if I'm like blaming my childhood as a 51-year-old man, I think I'm like kind of a loser. And I think, you know, to do that, like people are like, well, maybe you just need to get in touch with this childhood trauma. And I know you had challenges and you had issues, but like, I think there has to be a statute of limitations. When you are like, first of all, I'm like, now I'm taking care of my mother. Like I'm financially, my brother and I, we have to support her. She's in her 80s, right? And she's not married, you know, my father's dead. You know, so I'm taking care of my children. I'm taking care of my parents. You know, it's very awkward. And my career is in like full bloom, right? And I'm doing all these side hustles. And, you know, but like, you got to stop blaming your past. You got to stop blaming your parents.
That's true. But living a life true to yourself is more than that, right? Like maybe you're working for a boss so you're always trying to kiss his ass because you want promotions or whatever. Or maybe you're married to someone who politically is one way and you're politically another way, but you can't say where you feel politically because you're afraid she would lose interest in you. Or maybe you're a salesman, so you're always trying to please the people you're selling. There's a lot of reasons why, like I feel from the year 2000 to the year 2010, roughly a 10-year period, maybe even longer, maybe 1995 to 2010, I was totally not living a life true to myself. It was only when I really started writing about my own stories in 2010, and I reduced my expenses, and because I had just gotten out of a period of going broke, and I was able to, and I wasn't working for anybody. I was able to live a life true to myself, and I've always tried to stick to that, but it's hard, I think, because of so many different agendas. And I think the more ambition one has, the less you can live true to yourself, because the more you have to cater to the people you're ambitious about.
Yeah, but I mean, do you feel like the fact that you weren't, oh, that's a specific circumstance. So unless you're totally self-employed or inherit money or, you know, born, you know, on third base, you know, at a certain point, when is the statute of limitations when you are out of the nest, every decision at some level, like you could have quit,
right?
You felt pressure that you couldn't, but you could have quit, right? I mean,
I didn't care what my parents, you weren't a slave. The day after I left their house, like when I was 18, but.
Sorry, you didn't talk to them, you said?
No, I didn't care what they thought. like,
oh, you didn't care. Yeah. Right. So that was living a life true to yourself. So from 18, at least with the vector in the direction of your parents, you were living a life true to yourself. And now you're certainly living. In other words, I guess I'm skeptical of these notions of catharsis, that like everything has a root cause, or, you know, Freud thought everything was traceable to sex, or, you know, Frankl thought everything was traced to like searching for meaning. And, you know, there's kind of like I said, a statute of limitations when you were an adult, and yes, you may have been actually traumatized. I mean, you and I have mutual friends that have been like legitimately traumatized, abused, and so forth. And yet they're incredibly healthy individuals, and they've gotten past that. And it's almost like they weren't responsible for what happened to them, God forbid, but they're responsible for how they react to it.
Look, I think this is really important. Like, I wrote a book, Choose Yourself, because it was basically, don't let anyone else choose your opinions, your job, your passions, you're anything. And it's the whole book was about that. But I wrote it because it was something I had to learn, because I wasn't choosing myself. I wanted to be picked and selected. I wanted some group of people to like me and reward me. And to live true to yourself, you have to, at every level, choose who you are. And it doesn't, and it's not like it happens once and then forever after you're free. It's like every single day, you have to do this. Every single day you have to make progress, even if it doesn't mean make progress at X. Like, I can't make progress at basketball every day because I'm getting older. I'm going to get worse at basketball every day. I don't play basketball, but I'm just using that as an example. But
despite the 5'9 hops that you have. But it actually reminds me of a notepad idea I have. I have a couple ideas for you. So you've been watching 1883, right?
Yes.
And Yellowstone.
Yeah, and 1923 is coming out in a few days.
Yeah. What do you think of this idea? You know how that's kind of rekindled this notion of like Westerns and like Tractor Supply Company is like seeing this huge explosion, and there's whiskey brands and whatever, all these Western themes. Yeah. Okay. I have an idea mapping directly on from Yellowstone onto, stay with me, the biblical patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Joseph, and Jacob and Joseph. Okay.
Oh,
so the Yellowstone.
By the way, it totally maps one to one. I'm sure
it
was inspired by that.
Well, it may have been, although you really can't see much of that, but watching 1883, as I did on a 12-hour flight from Santiago to Los Angeles, that show, it's really, of course, there's like people dying, and there's attacks by Native Americans, and then there's this, and there's disease, and there's bandits. All those themes are happening in the Old Testament, in the first book of the five books of Moses called Genesis. There's only two laws in that whole book that starts, it's 40% of the Torah, the Old Testament. It only has two commandments, like be fruitful and multiply, and circumcision. That's basically it. And the rest of the Torah has...
Wait a second. Don't eat the apple. That's in Genesis.
That's not one of the 613 commandments, but yes, yeah. I'm saying it's all narrative. It's all stories.
That's in Genesis.
That's right. Onanism.
Yeah.
Yes, very good. That's actually technically spilling your seed. It's not masturbating, but masturbating does the same thing that onanism does. So in other words, let's not get into
that. Right.
The point is that Genesis is all stories, and the other four books of Moses are almost no stories and all laws. So it's kind of interesting. But the stories are, you know, there's rape, there's like tribal invasions, there's wars between kings and queens, and there's takeovers and political dynasties and intermarriage, all incredible themes. And you can almost map like John Dutton, you know, today onto like, say, Joseph, when he's become the king of Egypt, effectively the Pharaoh, you know, the courtier to the Pharaoh, saved the life. There's a famine, there's wars. His brothers who sold him into slavery and told his father he had been killed, you know, because they were jealous of his dreams. And he was hit upon by the Pharaoh's wife. It's incredible drama, right?
Yeah.
So that's Yellowstone. Okay. So Joseph is Yellowstone. Then you go back to 1883. That's Abraham.
That's clear.
So Abraham, like sets off into the land. He leaves Iraq and he goes to Canaan in Israel, and he has all these battles with the kings and his son. He has to sacrifice his son. He thinks he's talking to God. He gets divorced from his wife. It's incredible, right?
Yeah.
The drama. And then Isaac is in there, because Isaac is actually the one that we know least about. There's only like two or three chapters about him. And the women in Genesis are the heroes. They are the brilliant ones who tell the husbands are like kind of bumbling, you know, like they're just too ethereal. They're talking to God, and the women are like, this you know, kid who's living in our house is going to try to kill our son. And even the twins in my womb, you know, Rebecca, you know, says like the one is going to try to kill the other one, Esav and Isaac and Jacob. Anyway, and then the 1923 is Jacob, is where, you know, he goes and he settles, you know, he settles the land, and he has these dreams and ladders. And anyway, I thought that I'd like to get your opinion. I actually pitched this to someone that I don't think you've had on your show, Ben Shapiro, I've become friendly with Ben Shapiro, who's had an incredible year himself.
Yeah.
And he said, I like the idea, which I thought was pretty high praise. So I'm going to pitch that to his, he has a whole production company now. And I'm going to pitch it to them as a screenplay. So anyway, stay tuned for that.
But what's the idea? Just Genesis itself or another?
Like Yellowstone, but mapped onto the patriarchs. So it'd be called Canaan instead of Yellowstone, or maybe it would be called Patriarchs.
Yeah.
And it would be like a multi-series, multi-part, but not like, I don't want it to go on forever, like, you know, Friends or something, you know, it should be like 2 years.
Like, look, whenever they've done this in other religions, like in India, when they did the Mahabharata as a TV series, it was like the most popular TV series in
must
all
see,
of India.
Yeah. So that was must see TV.
Yeah, no one's ever done that really. I mean, they've done that about Jesus, but no one's ever done that about, and they've done, of course, the Ten Commandments, but the movie. But nobody's ever done it about Genesis. And you're right.
You know, it's so funny, James, is that like people say like Kanye West. You know, we'll say, I love the way, by the way, that we have to respect his choice of name. Like, we have to call him Ye, or it's like not respect. Who cares? This freaking loser, anti-Semite, scumbag. I'm not going to call him Ye.
I agree.
F him.
It's a shame this stuff has come out about him. I do think he's like the greatest music producer, at least for hip hop, of all time, you know, regardless.
He might be. But that's, again, I just did a video about this guy, Fritz Haber, who won the Nobel Prize in chemistry, who invented fertilization techniques and also invented the, you know, tools that created the gas chambers and created chemical warfare. He's called the father of chemical warfare. And I have this video called The Man Who Killed Millions and Then Won a Nobel Prize. But anyway, you could be very smart, but you can be very evil, right? So intelligence, wisdom, and knowledge are totally different things.
Yeah.
And so, so that's one idea that maps. And the reason I think it'll be so successful is that people have this romanticization about the past. Like, they forget about like how, even after seeing like a guy gets bitten, I'm not spoiling it too much, but let's say someone gets bitten by a snake in 1883, right? And then it's like a death sentence. Like, yeah. You sprain your ankle and you're dead. You know, like we have this, but like sales of cowboy boots and Western and the Airbnb where Yellowstone is shot, you know, the why when the barn, let's like rents for like $10,000 a night now. Anyway, people romanticize it. They're moving to Montana. They're changing the culture and the lifestyle. But the same thing could happen, you know, with respect to the Middle East. Like, the Middle East is kind of having a renaissance. There's more peace there. Maybe not with Palestinians, but that'll happen, I hope. But the rest, you know, UAE, Dubai, the World Cup is in Qatar. You know, it's like almost a renaissance in the zeitgeist that people are getting very, very infatuated with Middle Eastern and the culture and the hospitality of the Middle East and showing that and how it traces back literally thousands of years. It's not like made up. You can call the Bible, you know, whatever you want, but the culture, like those things, family dynamics, where the role of women, the role of children, those are all crystallized back then.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, I, of course, the first thing I thought was I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One in eight. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
One in eight, start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
One thing I'm always interested in is, I think, first off, I agree. I think the story of Genesis would make a great TV series, whatever. But I would argue if you take any topic and map Genesis onto it, like they did, like you're making the comparison with the Yellowstone, that's going to be successful. So you have to decide, do you want to, the topic to be biblical, or do you want to, you could make a science fiction space opera like Star Wars. You could map Genesis onto Star Wars because there's a generational thing happening, and there's about, you know, who is inherits the you know, the family power essentially, and all these things happen in many stories. You know what also is the books of Samuel 1 and 2, I think would make a great series, because that's King David, which is arguably the most interesting story in the Bible, because that's got real, like, you know, palace intrigue and wars and deception and betrayal. I mean, so does Genesis, but I think even the books of Samuel even more, with King David and King Saul and Solomon, mm-hmm. and then Israel split in half after Solomon. So mm-hmm. we could, you know what we should do? We should just take every section of the Bible and turn it into a TV series.
Exactly, right. So that's one of my ideas. Then the other one, okay, so what's the problem? Like, when people get really famous, right? So they're getting really, like, internet famous. And people are saying, like, they'd rather be famous even for doing something bad. And that's why, like, Ben Shapiro actually does something important, where if there's a mass shooting, like at the nightclub, the LGBTQ nightclub in Colorado last month, he won't use the name of the shooter. He won't ever mention that. And whereas the New York Times, they'll print the name and, like, oh, his upbringing, and, like, he can blame his mother because he was overweight.
He used to not to, historically.
When I look at that, but then you've got this whole thing where people are, you know, like, some people are saying to Elon Musk, like, you better have a food taster. And, you know, like, so, you know, then you get so big that you become like a target, and everything you say, and you make fun of pronouns, you know, prosecute Fauci and this and that, and, like, oh, like, and you get death threats, right? So, or you get doxxed. So imagine a service. So this is anti-doxing as a service, ADAAS, okay? And then, so you go out there and you basically do what's called a white hat hacking thing. You, like, find out everything about Jay, you know, that you can possibly find out. And then you just, like, protect him against all these different threat vectors, you know? So, like, it's basically like insurance against, you know, Jay getting doxxed, you know, like, oh, he works, you know, he just moved, you know, back to Malaysia. I don't know. They're just making stuff up. So What do you think about that? Like as more things in society become more kind of highly prized, like fame, attention, I think it's going to get worse. Like people are going to go after like Josh Peck. Like I've become friends with Shua Peck. You know, like he's like has to have security. It's insane.
Yeah,
no, and he's got 13 million followers.
I think it's a good idea if it were possible. It's like sort of like cybersecurity. Like cybersecurity is an important industry now in society. But as has been described to me by cybersecurity companies, the good guys will never be as good as the bad guys are at creating the threats. And so for doxing, I think it's very hard to create that as a company. Now you can provide insurance against doxing. That might be a
company. Exactly.
So
that's right.
That might be another thing. And then you have to just figure out if someone's gaming that or not. But to prevent it, yeah, you can provide consulting to help prevent it, but it's unpreventable.
And then the last idea has to do with like this chat, AI chat, GPT, mm-hmm. These chat bots, which are very interesting. I don't think they're quite there yet. I mean, maybe because it's more subjective than like beating somebody in chess or AlphaGo or whatever, or folding a protein simulate. But you have these things. So I guess the analog would be kind of something that tests for biases in these chats. So like I got one from my brother yesterday. He put in like, what is the Great Reset? And write three paragraphs about the Great Reset and why Carl Schwab is trying to have a social credit system implemented. You know, just for fun, he sent me the output of it. It's like, that's a myth. And a GPT comes back with like, that's a right-wing talking point that has a... So it's obviously like looking at Wikipedia. So if I ever do a video about COVID, which I have one coming out with Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. I don't know if you know that name.
Yeah, he's the Stanford professor who was just made news because he was in the Twitter files.
He is in the Twitter files, but the reason that he was in the Twitter files is because he established what was called the Great Barrington Declaration, which was a common sense protocol that we should work to not do social lockdowns and complete society shutdown, which we did do, because that would have ultimately negative downstream consequences on mental health and physical health and economic health. And he's an epidemiologist and a medical doctor at the Stanford Medical School. And he was later targeted specifically by Fauci and Francis Collins, the director of the NIH, and they called for a takedown of him and one of his colleagues, Michael Levitt, who's a Nobel Prize winner at Stanford, for being fringe, quote, this is what Collins is, imagine the, like, basically any boss, the ultimate boss of the world, you know, of this world of academia, he's a director of the NIH, which supplies $50 billion a year in medical research. And he called him a fringe epidemiologist. And that he called for a takedown of them, public takedown, basically calling for a public shaming. And Fauci said, I largely agree. And this is just despicable. So I have a podcast coming out with him. But okay. But when I do the podcast, YouTube will insert, and YouTube, and this is why I don't like YouTube very much, even though I'm it's trying to grow my channel's audience. But they'll put a warning and a link to Wikipedia. It's just like, if you put COVID anywhere in there, here's the thing on COVID. Or if you put it in the Great Reset, I did an interview with Neil Ferguson, the historian also at Stanford. And it was about the Great Reset. And the Great Reset is a myth. And it just refers to Wikipedia, which is like wildly as left-wing as Twitter ever was. And it'll refer you to there. And so it's GPT chat is just searching Wikipedia. So it's like these biases are just getting like mega, mega amplified.
No,
and so
I
we need some kind of tool to like an AI tool that's basically going to be the anti-Turing test. So it's a tool that's going to prove that you're a computer. And I don't know how to implement it. I mean, you know much more about computer science than I do. But like we're going to need some way, just like detecting, this guy Tom Cruise, or Michael Saylor, is telling you to buy this crap coin, let me say, that, this is a deep fake. But we need the same thing. We need like deepfake detectors. We need chatbot detectors and all sorts of things. I think it's going to become very, 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 very serious pretty soon.
I think you could be right. And I think my solution is to withdraw more and more from social media. And this relates to our beginning conversation, which is, every day I used to be on social media to try to get more followers and engage with my, with people and as many people as possible. And now I just realize A, not only the uselessness of it, but it just gets me in more and more trouble. And but your point about AI, I just want to tell you, on Notepad, we have an AI, we have GPT-3 hooked up. And if you need AI-based ideas to add to your own list, we have an, we, you know, coded it up so that you can do that. And so I had a bad business idea. I called it bad idea the other day, and it was called the podcast family tree. So like,
okay,
like you've been on my podcast. So you're like a quote unquote son of mine on my podcast.
Yep.
And Ryan Howell
and Jordan Harbinger, just to interrupt, was the reason that I was able to come on your podcast.
Right. And so I've been on
Jordan, and get you on my podcast.
On mine, or let's say Andrew Huberman's been mine, and Lex Fridman also had Andrew Huberman. So Lex Fridman and I would be sort of like in-laws together of Andrew Huberman. And the idea of the podcast family tree, the business point, is that you could see which podcasts are similar to yours, the ones you have the most kind of genetic, quote unquote, you know, genetic material together on this family tree. And also it could help you find guests. You could see which podcasts have had guests, which podcasts similar to yours on the family tree have had guests that you haven't had, and so on. So anyway.
Correct. Yes. Networking. The network of networks. Yeah. It's like Facebook. Yeah.
But I had the AI generate an additional idea for this list. The list was describing the idea. And then I fed in just the phrase podcast family tree to the AI and to have it come up with an idea. Mm-hmm. So it didn't really understand what I was asking. So here is the idea it came up with. The title of the idea is the family tree of bad ideas. And then it says, the description of the family tree of bad ideas is how capitalism is ruining our planet. In this podcast, explore how capitalism is ruining our planet. We trace its origins back to its creator and see how it has spawned a new generation of terrible ideas. That was the AI-generated idea. It had nothing to do with capitalism when I was asking it, but that was like its impulse. So you're right.
Wow.
It's this like weird bias that we have to be careful.
Yeah, about. It's funny. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So look, Brian, you got to come on the podcast more often. We can't have it be like, you know,
I know. Year.
And we should also figure out another thing to
I'm
work
getting
on.
More.
We always were thinking out things to work on.
Well, we had a pod pub, which, you know, we should get back to, you know, distilling books. Are you still bullish, you know, on podcasting as the you know, a big thing, or you think we're reaching peak podcast?
No, we're
up to 4 million.
I don't see the podcast world growing, but it's not shrinking either. And I think there is always a voice for, you know, people want to listen to things when they're driving to work or they're at their gym. They can't watch things. They listen to things then. And they want to hear good ideas and interesting ideas and insightful ideas and or good stories. You know, true crime is the biggest podcast category, actually. So I think, you know, people always say books are dead and now they're saying podcasts are dead. None of these things are true. It's just that TikTok is amazing. So
yeah, exactly. I started to do the short video. I can't get into TikTok. I just, I think it's going to get shut down.
The most talented humans on the planet. Okay. Whether it's TikTok or Instagram Reels, whatever, the most talented humans on the, you see these like kids jumping from building to building and then doing flips and then other kids doing, you know, magic. That's unbelievable. And it's amazing the talent that finds itself on TikTok.
What is going to be the TikTok? I asked a question on Twitter. I was like, now there's post news and then it was Mastodon. Oh, I was like, what is post news going to be the Mastodon of, you know, like, cause like Twitter's just going to stay, right? I mean, you're pretty optimistic about Twitter.
I think Elon Musk is going to do a great job, and he's already doing a great job, but, Notepad, Notepd.com. The social network of ideas. This is the most actual insightful social network out there with a great community. I'm self-promoting because it's my site.
Yeah. No, I love it.
I love this site.
I got the at Brian at Notepad. I got the premium handle, the 5-character handle.
Yeah.
That's thanks to Jay setting it up.
You're going to get offers for millions for that.
Oh, I know. I'm going to sell that squatter domain and squat on that. So last question for you maybe is like, it revolves around. So one of the things that's been hard for me is like, I don't, you know, I get paid. I'm a public, you know, university professor. I get paid fine. But, you know, obviously I get sponsor opportunities for the podcast. And you always said, you know, when I was first asking you, like, should I accept this, you know, click, you know, CPM, whatever that stands for, cost per mil. And I said, you know, should I accept, you know, a dollar per whatever, $15, yeah. $20. And you were like, well, there's the actual money aspect of it, which is important. But then there's a like, there's kind of the prestige that you are in a category of people that can advertise and monetize your podcast.
Right. I think so, that is valuable.
But now like it is also an overhead. There's a burden. There's managing expectations, and there's like looking for advertisers. Then there's vetting their things. Like, do I really want to do like manscaping again? You know, like how much is there left to mow in my lawn? You know, whatever. Like, and just for the brand, and like I'm supposed to be a serious professional. And then sometimes it'll be some program, like they'll put in like eBay, and it'll be like 500 decibel loud. You know, like get your Christmas card and whatever. I'm like, well, I'm assigned. Like I've got a Nobel Prize winner on right now. You know,
I
guess I'm asking you, should I? I don't need the money, you know, necessarily. It's not that much. It is a workload. It is a kind of managerial overhead, a burden, bandwidth, detractor.
Okay. So your pain point. So let's just look at the pain points first. One is there's a reputation thing. You say you're a serious professor. It looks weird when you're talking about manscaping and whatever. Second is the managerial overhead. Third is what?
The third is, like giving something away for free, on one hand, it could increase your audience, right? Because people like, I just skip over. Even your ads, like half the time I'll just fast forward, you know, 45 second skip.
Yeah.
You know, I have this thing when I'm listening to Ben Shapiro, I know what he's going to say, like, but now. And as soon as he says like, but now, like it's 45, you know, and then like he's back and I don't listen to him. But I'd like to not have to do that, you know, and it would make me more endeared to a podcaster because he's not selling me stuff. He's not the type of person that I have to worry he's going to sell me Athletic Greens or whatever.
Right. So I would say for you, you probably don't need to do ads to you know, you have a lot of things like you look, me too. I probably don't need to have ads, but here's the thing. First off, I still stand by, it shows that you're the type of podcast who's big enough that people want to advertise on you. And then your content is such that people want to advertise. So that's a kind of authority, legitimacy. But
yeah,
a lot of your pain points have nothing to do with ads, but like managerial overhead, you can use a third-party ad placement agency like Midroll to do all your ad placements. And you could say, I don't want to do any host-read ads. I just want to do ones that are read by someone else and placed into the podcast. I want to have nothing to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have zero managerial overhead and zero personal stake in what you're advertising.
You still have this thing that you are in a category of someone who's pitching you, you know, to my audience. Now I'm like a salesman.
But it's not you personally, like you're
I'm
not
a vector to sell them.
Yeah,
sure, I agree. It's one step removed, but like if let's say I just like this all in podcast. You know, I think one of the reasons I like listening to them is, you know, if I'm going to sleep, you know, I'm not going to get interrupted with some ad for eBay in the middle or some, you know, ad for, yeah,
Athletic
Greens, I guess.
I don't think you need to do ads. One reason I like to do ads is that I also feel everything I do should have, at some point, should be profitable. Because that's another way of measuring that I'm doing something that is, I don't want to say worthwhile, but it is doing something that is hit some bar that people have said, okay, this is worth it. And
the problem with that is that, yes, right. So as long as you're not like, I have to break even or I have to, you know, make money, I think that's when it becomes like,
podcast
I got into this for
make
fun.
Money unless you're like Joe Rogan or Ben Shapiro, but,
or Tim Ferriss or or Andrew Huberman, who won't come on my show.
Like, I like to know that everything I do pays for itself. So
yeah,
this gives me a good discipline about the quality of what I'm doing. So I don't take it for granted. It gives me a good discipline about, you know, understanding what to pay people and what, you know, what different costs are worth it. So this is only a new philosophy for me. And but it was told to me by Naveen Jain, who's a billionaire who started InfoSpace in the 90s. And now he has entrepreneurship activities. Because I asked him, why'd you raise $20 million for your latest business when you're a billionaire? Why didn't you just fund it yourself?
Right.
And he said that if he paid for himself, he would never know if it really had value. Like, you know when it has value when other people value it. So
that's true. But I mean, at a certain point, but you only want to know it has value because you want it to be not sunk cost, you know, and kind of leaving money on the table or whatever. Like, in other words, you could just start a charity, you know, or whatever.
I don't want to do that. I want to do a podcast. The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX is track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
What do you want to do in, let me ask you a question. Next year, what's like your calendar look like? You're, you know, kind of in all different dimensions, a week scale for the whole year. Like if I had asked myself last year, why I want that, I couldn't have imagined how great this year would be with the one major tragedy of losing a very close friend at a very young age with young children. That's equal to all the good stuff that happened and more. But, you know, I couldn't have fathomed what would happen this year, and it's great and I feel blessed.
Yeah,
what are you looking forward to next year that's reasonable, that's possible to occur?
First off, I always make predictions for myself at the beginning of the year, and they always change. Like, I remember with 2014 or 2015, I wanted to write a novel, and I ended up getting obsessed with stand-up comedy. And that's all I did. But I'm really excited about, I help so many people with their writing, and I really love it and enjoy it. Like, I enjoy coaching writing now more than I even enjoy writing. And I'm really excited about making a writing course on whether I put it on Udemy or wherever else, I don't know. But Jay and I are videotaping that this coming weekend. The other
thing is,
I've been working, you know, when I was a lad in the 90s, I, you know, achieved a high chess ranking. And my goal is to achieve an even higher one this coming year and then write a book about it. Because the book has been so fascinating. It's not about chess. Like, there's so many things I've experienced on this journey of trying to achieve something I achieved as a 27-year-old that it's blown my mind. I learned things I did not realize I'd be learning about myself, about the brain, about health, about ambition. All of these things that we've talked about has come from just simply trying to achieve the chess rating I had in the 90s.
So that's kind of like your metric, summarizing your metric for next year. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Because if I do that, it means I will have put myself through a study program and discipline to a level that I've never done before. Like, it's much harder for some
reason. No, I get it. And it's kind of like an encrypted, you know, very dense encryption that summarizes a lot of things. And it reminds me of a very famous Russian physicist who was the intellectual son of another great Russian physicist, Yakov Zeldovich. He said that this guy Zeldovich would always tell him, he would say, like when he was a young man, he said, you must take your son or daughter skiing. Like, that's your goal in life. And he never knew what the hell he meant. Like, first of all, he was single. Second, he didn't have any kids that he knew about, you know, but he was like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, imagine what it means to take your kid skiing. You have to have physical health. You have to have a kid. You have to have, you know, maybe have been married.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah.
And then you have to have the wherewithal to go there. And
that is the perfect
analogy. Isn't that interesting?
Analogy. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's right. Because like I realize now I need to think, and this I realized a while ago, but I've been needing to think about my nutrition. I've been needing to think about my sleep schedule, my stamina, my energy. So I have to exercise.
Studying. Energy. Yeah.
And just neuroscience. I've had to learn like what things just at the age of 50 are different than at the age of 27. And I always thought I was very good at learning how to learn, but there's a different level now achieving something at this age that is the industry itself has changed. The chess world has changed, but I've changed. So the discipline is like enormous. It's much more than what I thought I needed.
It's like, imagine I tell you, James, you're going to come in last in your final race. You're like, what the hell? You know, I don't want to come in last. But if I say, oh, you set the world record for over 100-year-old speed walkers, you'd be like, hell yeah. Like, you know, that'll be awesome. Like, just to know that. So anyway, I wish that you will have at least the fourth power of my chess rating coming this year, and that you won't have to cheat to get there, you know, with putting something, you know, in some orifice of your body, as alleged by somebody about somebody else. But I do wish you all the best. And yes, I hope that we can talk a little bit more frequently and maybe get together. I'll tell you, I have a really cool kind of adventure that's coming up in January, February.
Where are you going?
Something we've talked about. Well, I'll talk about it later. It's related to Sam Bankman-Fried though. So I'm going to need your advice. I'm going to go visit him.
All right. Let's.
I want to get him on the podcast, but I need some help in vetting it. He doesn't know about this at all, by the way, but I'm going to be in his neighborhood. So I figured I'd give it a try.
The Bahamas?
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, Brian, once again, such a great time having you on the podcast. And I actually had a bunch of science questions for you, but we should do another one in a month where.
Yeah.
Because I always get these articles like, turns out time in the universe never really exists. I get these weird, like
a wormhole thing was created in the lab in a quantum computer. You're like, just putting all these salads together.
I have all these, like, I want to, you know, things that I really want to learn what they mean. Because
I want to be your sign. I want you to treat me like I treat my grad students.
I will do that. All right.
Okay, Ryan. So, well, happy Hanukkah. Have Merry Christmas, everybody out there. And can't wait to talk to you again soon.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.